Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Life Enthusiast Co-op Online Radio Network, restoring vitality to you and the planet. I'm your host, Scott Patton, and joining us, as usual, is the founder of the Life Enthusiast Co-op, Martin Patella. Hey, Martin, how are you doing today?
Excellent. Scott, if I didn't know that you're saying it live, I think this is coming from a recorded push-button something.
It's amazing how my radio voice just comes to the forefront when I start up our shows.
Oh, you are awesome. You are just amazing.
And then I get back to my normal voice later on, I hope.
Yeah. the circus barker leaves the room, and we're back to being regular humans. Oh, no, I'm Martin, who speaks with a particular style. I don't know what that is.
Well, and as we do these things, you know, neither of us are radio school graduates, as you probably have noticed if you've listened to us for any length of time. But what happens is I listen to talk radio now because I want to know, well, how do they segue from one segment to another, and how do they close off, and how do they start up, and all these things. So, yeah. And of course, you end up picking up some of the nuances of what they do.
Totally. And of course, I keep thinking, well, should I put on my persona, you know, like I'm the expert from out of town and I got a stethoscope and around my neck, or should I just be me? And of course, it's always easier to be me because you get what you get. And it's going to be the same treatment you get if you phone in or if you meet me in person.
That's right.
As opposed to some kind of a put-on act.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting concept because I have a friend who teaches speakers to, you know, so someone wants to get up on stage and talk about whatever the topic is they want to talk about to hundreds, ten hundreds, thousands of people. And so he teaches people how to do that. And, of course, being a podcasting expert, I often show up and talk for an hour or two to these people about the benefits of podcasting to help them with their speaking careers. And we had an interesting conversation once because he said, the guy that you see up on the stage is exactly the same guy you see, you know, if you have lunch with me or meet me walking down the street or however you otherwise meet me. And I looked at him and I said, the guy that you see up on the stage is totally different than the guy you might meet at a party or for dinner or somewhere else. And he sort of looks at me and I go, and I guess the best way I can describe that or tell you is a story. I went to speak in Australia a few years ago, and I was going to be speaking in for about 2 hours in front of about 600 Australians. And the people that I went down with, they knew someone who was local, and they decided that they would go out for a drive with that person, invited me along. So he drove. My coworker was in the front seat. His wife and I were in the back seat. And we 8 hours, we drove around Sydney in the countryside. And I probably, in 8 hours, said like 10 words. Because they were yapping in the front, and I was just enjoying being in Australia and was really, really quiet. So you can imagine his shock when the next day he's in the audience and I get up and I'm just super energetic, super talking, engaging everybody and doing my whole presentation.
Stage thing,
which is an aspect of myself, but I have another aspect of myself that can be incredibly quiet. And he experienced the two extremes of Scott in that 24-hour period, and it was really quite funny because he came up and said, I had no idea you were one of the speakers. I mean, you hardly said anything, you know.
And so same goes here for me. Yeah. I mean, here I am talking to the listener, to the one person that's listening to it. I can't imagine that this is on anything other than an iPod or something like that, straight into one person's ear. And thank you for listening. And yes, you are my friend. And if I were standing on a stage with 500 people in the audience, I'd have to be 10 feet tall and 4 feet wide and talk like this, kind of like be there, right?
Some people do and some people don't. It's kind of funny because I've seen a lot of people up on stage and I thought, wow, like they're really laid back and it really depends, I think, on what they want to accomplish and also their personalities. And the biggest thing my coaches have always told me when it comes to being on stage was just be yourself. You just need to be more of yourself than right. you may be normally. And that's kind of the fun part because we don't always know, right? We're such multifaceted beings. And so speaking of multifaceted, that means everybody has different opinions on how to do things. And you and I were talking before we got on the air about a friend of yours who sent you an email with five foods that made you fat, and another, I believe it was another friend that sent you an email with five foods that make you skinny, and you had an interesting insight into that.
Yes, it was not a friend. It was, you know, one of the competitors, one of the health blogs or email list. Of course, I have to keep track of the industry and see what's going on out there. And so it just turned out that four of the five foods, one was emailed, these five foods make you skinny. And the other one says, these five foods will make you fat. And four of them were the same item.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And that's the funniest thing, right? And so that there's logic to it, of course. And that's the biological individuality. We have been talking about it. It depends on your genetics. It depends. Right. I mean, if you're thyroid dominant, the foods that will make you skinny are proteins and fats. If you're a pituitary dominant, the foods that will make you skinny are high purine, red meats like liver and onions and steak. But if you're a G-type, if your dominant gland is, especially in girls, is the gonads, it will make, you know, red meat will make you overstimulated, and then your bottom half will grow wide. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of comical that one food truly will make you skinny, depending on your genetics.
Right.
Now what do we do with it?
Yeah, that's we need to know who we are, right?
Right, we need to understand. And this is the frustration of all the weight loss programs. Out there are myriad of diets and myriad of follow me, I know how to make you skinny, stop putting on weight. Well, right. one of the most favorite ways for people in North America to put on weight is to have their thyroid malfunction, and once the metabolism is tweaked down, because it's like the thermostat being set for too cold, too low, and once that happens, then just walking past a bakery shop makes you gain a pound.
Right. Oh.
That's never your – well, yeah, it would be your problem too, right? Like you specifically are a parasympathetic. So for you, your health food is steak.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And your fat food is cake.
Yeah.
So be careful how you pronounce it. Steak, cake,
Yeah.
Which
and you know, it's really quite amazing because the first time that sunk in, I don't believe it was the first time you told me, but I think it was.
Oh no! It took you a while to get over the shock that everything you learned in the health industry was upside down for you.
Right, and so once that happened, I went over to visit my parents, and my mom made. A roast.
And yes.
I just drooled. And of course, I now had the freedom to enjoy it because before it was like,
you have the permission.
I have the permission to enjoy it. And I'll tell you, like, it was if I, you know, the stereotypic little kid in the candy store and he's just like in ecstasy because he's got all these candies and he's got a nickel in his hand. And that's how I felt. It was, and it was just like orgasmic eating this
this perfectly cooked piece of meat, right?
Yeah, with the onions in it and the kind, not really gravy, but that kind of sauce that it comes in, and that she had carrots in it and potatoes, and the whole thing just together was just like, whoa. And really was orgasmic, and I was just like, oh. And I hadn't really ever allowed myself to enjoy it, but it was kind of like, this is part of who I am, right?
Yeah, totally.
An aspect of myself, like we were talking about on stage, and to deny it was hard, but it was what I was thought I should do, right?
And it was counterproductive.
Totally counterproductive. And you're right, like the first time. And I don't know if the first time I dropped about – well, I shouldn't say first time because I don't think I really put on many inches. But, I mean, I dropped about 4 or 5 inches off of my waist about 10 years ago. And and I actually had a suit that I really liked, so I took it into a tailor and had him take it in. And the tailor's son, who was overweight, the first thing he said when I picked it up was, "How did you do that?" Right?
Yes.
You know? And what I did was I cut out pasta and bread and the donuts and the muffins and anything that kind of had wheat in it.
Yes.
And then I danced once a week and did my walking. I didn't really dramatically change my physical activity.
Yeah.
But just cutting those out and replacing them with something else, I don't know what it was, just made a huge difference in a relatively short period of time.
Yes. Yeah, I would like to chime in here with the thought on exercise. While exercise is really, really important, like number one, you need to move up and down against gravity or else your lymphatic system will stagnate. Number two, if you don't use it, it'll atrophy. So definitely exercise is a wonderful thing.
Yeah, so you're not about to say don't exercise.
Oh, no. But exercise is not what will regulate your weight. There's no way you can count calories and say, oh, this had 500 calories and it takes half an hour of running to burn off 500 calories.
Oh.
While there is some level of scientific correlation, that's not really how you manage your weight. You manage your weight by what you eat. You manage your fitness by how you exercise.
Right. Which, of course, you want to be fit. There's no doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. You want to be fit. You want to be able to do push up and I don't know, whatever, you know,
run stairs without keeling over.
Well, run 2 blocks without falling on your face. I don't know, whatever level of fitness you choose for yourself, it's good. I mean, I'm on my trampoline every day, so I time myself. I do a few sprints just to be sure that I can do it. So if ever I need to go catch a bus or something, or if maybe a saber-toothed tiger shows up, I can at least attempt to run away.
Right.
But anyway, so just going back to the biological individuality, recognizing the fact that the 5 foods that make you fat email, or the fat foods that make you skinny email, it depends. And it depends on who you are. It depends on your genetics. It depends on what ancestry genetics you have inherited. And then I would just put it this way, knowing what type you are, I think it's invaluable, because it will, number one, give you gigantic amount of peace, knowing that knowing which foods are going to make you gain weight or lose weight. And so you can at peace say, oh, today I'm eating against my type. I'm okay with it.
Yeah. Well, and the other, I want to delve into that just a little bit deeper too, because we've had conversations where I said, oh man, I've just been like dragging today. I've just got no energy. And you say, well, what'd you have for breakfast? And I say, an apple.
A bowl of cereal.
You know, or a bowl of cereal. And it's, well, that's exactly what'll put your type to sleep.
Yeah, exactly. And so to illustrate, right, there are these two sensations. When you're drifting into overly alkaline, you're losing motivation, and then you're drifting towards depression and laziness and just not wanting to get out of your chair or bed or whatever. Like when you have a kid who's refusing to get out of bed because it's just, oh, leave me alone, they're overly alkaline.
Yeah.
Of course, we don't know what will make them less alkaline. It could be either more protein or more carb. We need to know their type. The other side, of course, the overly acidic, that's the side where you're drifting first into impatience and then into argumentative and then into anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And is it not interesting that I saw a piece of news on television not long ago. A pharmacist is speaking and he says 75% of the prescriptions we fill are either for anxiety or depression. Psychological, mind modification. 75% of prescriptions. So if you're one of the people that is tempted to get on a prescription for mood modification, either less anxiety or less depression, consider the fact that it's probably the way you're eating that's putting you there.
Right. And so we need to be aware of, and it's not an instantaneous thing, right? Like we eat something and like 3 or 4 hours or maybe even 8 hours later, we're feeling the effects of what we ate.
Yeah, the effects are quite quick, like 1 hour to 2 hours, it's there. But the echo of it stays long. Like, for instance, with wheat, you know, if you're sensitive to gluten, it doesn't knock you immediately. It takes 2 days to spread through. So, for instance, if you eat pizza today and you shouldn't have, it's going to be 2 days later that you're going to have a runny nose, congested nasal passages, and I don't know what else might happen. A rash on your forehead. Who knows? Anyway, so we're talking about the moods and the which foods, right? And that the value of knowing which type you are. There's the other issue, and that's the glandular dominance. You know, the moods, they are regulated by these drift into alkalinity or into acidity. But the long-term, the weight is dependent on the dominant gland. There are four: thyroid, adrenals, pituitary, and gonads. And if you're the thyroid type, typically you would look more like a quarterback or a basketball player. And in girls, you would look more like the Victoria's Secret model than anything else. If you, and that person will get fat by carbs and skinny by proteins.
Okay.
Especially the, thyroid. Thyroid depends on iodine, so you need to get more seafood, seaweed, and you need to eat fish and eggs, that sort of thing.
Now, so this is if I'm dominant, but if I'm not dominant, I'm still going to need to have a healthy thyroid, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So this isn't like if I discovered that my gonads were where I was dominant, that wouldn't mean I don't need iodine.
That's right. That's correct. But if you're thyroid dominant, you're more likely to have a thyroid crash than the other types.
Right.
And anyway, the adrenal type, in guys, it looks more like the linebacker. You know, strong legs, deep chest, and gals, that probably looks more like Tina Turner. She's a good example of that. So those people put on weight by steak and lose weight by salad.
Hmm.
And they're tempted to eat steak because that's their most favorite thing. And they may be that they, you know, if they are parasympathetic or fast oxidizer, that's what they need to eat. But they always have to balance it with the other one. And if they don't, they'll end up in this overweight situation. Of course, you see them, right? Like an overweight linebacker. They're big.
So with the linebackers, okay, the story that I keep hearing is, well, you know, I exercised and I ran and I was working out all the time and I was playing, and I'd sit down and I'd have, you know, four steaks before the game, and and that was my lifestyle. And then when I quit,
stopped exercising
all that much, then that's when and I didn't really cut down on what I was eating, that's how I put it up. So it was more blamed on the quantity as opposed to what it was that they were eating.
Which I believe was correct. But now that they don't have that sort of output, they need to change their diet, and they need to change it by going vegetarian if they really want it fast.
Right.
And then there's the pituitary. The pituitary body type is quite interesting. It's the classic nerd. You have a large head and a pudgy body, sort of I don't know. I don't want to be insulting to anyone, but I'm just visualizing sort of this computer nerdy guy with curly hair, a large head, and legs that are sort of X-shaped, knock-kneed kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. And in gals, it's frequently they look like a Kewpie doll or Cabbage Patch doll or whatever. They're just padded from their feet all the way up.
Huh.
And these people, believe it or not, their health food is purine. So if they ever want to lose weight, they need to get into steak and organ meats like liver and kidneys and hearts and tongue, and just they just walk past. Those people typically love creamy dairy stuff like yogurts and cheesecakes and that sort of thing, and that's what will make them the most fast to gain weight. And then the last one, that's the G, the gonadal. That's more dominant in women than in men. And I guess the most typical, a young one would be somebody like Jennifer Lopez, and an older one like Hillary Clinton. Like you see them that they are one or two sizes bigger from waist down than from waist up.
Right.
And that's what the ovaries dominance will do. They just push in the lower region and make you grow there. And so if you're G dominant in your early years, that's how you'll look, the most feminine of them all, right? Just, of course, guys love it. Women seem to be confused about that. They think that they have a big rear end, but that's how it goes. Anyway, so they are tempted by spicy food, if you can believe it.
Oh.
So if their cravings or food desires are like hot Mexican, Thai, and Indian, whatever, you know, hot foods.
Yeah.
That's what stimulates the gonads. That's what will make them eat more and gain more. And so they need to tame that. Their skinny foods are more into the salad and less into the savory, rich meals.
So it's important that you have a good idea of which type, you know, where your dominance is, what your metabolic types are. It's really about knowing yourself, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's the combination of the two. So you understand your glandular dominance, so you know which foods are going to make you fat and which foods are going to make you skinny. And then you understand your metabolic dominance, which then will give you the tools, you know, the balance between fats, proteins, and carbs, which will give you the tools to manage your moods and your energy. Because if you mismanage your balances, then you'll be always tired. There's not enough, to best say it, the metaphor I would use is the two typical engines we have, diesel and gasoline. Gasoline is very flammable. Diesel is not. If you put gasoline into a diesel engine, you'll burn it out. If you put diesel into a gasoline engine, you'll gum it up. It just won't run.
Right.
So we
gum up our bodies and it doesn't run.
Yeah. So if you feed rich food like steak and whatever, well, fats and proteins, too much of it to a person whose metabolic efficiency is low, they are not able to convert it into energy fast enough. So they're always tired and sluggish. So that's right. if on the other hand, the metabolic efficiency, the furnace, is highly efficient, you feed it fats and proteins, it manages it well. But if you feed it carbs, it goes into this too high a flame. You know, it's like putting newspaper into your fireplace. It just burns fast. Pouring gas in the fire, that's probably the best metaphor I can come up with. So when you have somebody like a fast oxidizer or a parasympathetic and you feed them too much in the carb side, they experience a quick high, then they are overly energized, and then they crash.
Right.
The other way around, if you feed your overly rich food to somebody like the sympathetic or slow oxidizer, they just never take off. It's just like they're trying to get off the runway, but it's not going to happen.
So part of the reason at Easter and Christmas and Thanksgiving that we lay on the couch moaning is because we filled our bodies with a whole bunch of food that is kind of against our metabolic type, and as well as probably ate twice as much as we
did. The number one will be too much in quantity. But what's interesting is that there are body types that are balanced. There are people who indeed need all three, fats, proteins, and carbs, on the plate. So a typical turkey dinner, which has the turkey, the stuffing, the five different vegetables and potatoes and whatever's, that's just right for them. Pizza is just right for them.
Hmm.
The problem with pizza is the wheat. That's a whole different problem.
Right, or you know, or if processed foods, or
we should get into that right now. It's the ingredients.
Right. Like you can eat food that's not food, and it'll fill you up, I guess. It's
not
gonna help.
But it'll kill you in the process.
Right. Well, there was an interesting article on hungryforchange.tv that I saw that I just wanted to quickly run by you since we kind of segued into it, and that was the 10 things that the processed food industry does not want you to know.
Okay, hit me.
All right. Number one on the list, not necessarily the most important or least important, was processed foods are addictive and can cause you to, overeat.
You know, there are some things like the MSG that definitely stimulates your appetite. And then they have also discovered something called the bliss point, which is a combination of sugar, fat, and salt. And it totally overrides the brain. It just, you just want to hit it again and again and again. It's practically, it's hitting the same centers in the brain as the sexual orgasmic experience.
Ah, right.
So when they hit it just so, you want more.
So this could artificially stimulate dopamine, which is the pleasure neurotransmitter in our brain.
There we go.
And there we go. Okay, so number two, because we don't have a lot of time to get through this. Processed foods are linked to obesity. No, that can't be so.
Well, sure. Next.
Next. High fructose corn syrup. Do we need sugar? Do we need to say any more? Overeating?
Okay, too many calories. And what's funny about the HFCS is that it doesn't seem to register. Like you're taking it in and your satiety centers don't know that it's calories coming in.
Yeah, it just, you don't feel full, like it's like you want more. Processed food, number three, often contains ingredients that do not follow the principle of food combining.
Well, that's a funny thing. I used to be totally on board with food combining, and it still makes sense. There are, if to digest carbohydrates, you need the enzymes that activate in fairly alkaline pH. To digest proteins and fats, you need enzymes that activate in a fairly acidic range. So, of course, you can't really have both.
Right. So, and they actually talk about meat and cheese pizza. Cheese, a dairy product, meat, an animal protein, pizza crust, grain make a terrible combination that is hard for you to digest.
And yet, yes, true. And yet there are people who are perfectly fine with it.
Right. So this is, yeah. Okay, so number four, processed foods contribute to an imbalanced inner ecosystem.
Well, yeah, because you're overfeeding the carbo calories, so you're going to be feeding the microbes that are going to overproduce, and you end up with leaky gut and who knows what ugly stuff down in the digestive tract.
Okay, and this kind of ties in a little bit with what we were talking about before in terms of depression and mood swings. A diet high in processed foods can lead to depression, memory issues, and mood swings.
I think they're wrong about that. I think food, period, will lead to that. It's just which food. You know, like processed food is bad for you for the following main reason. If it's made to stay stable and not spoil on the shelf of the grocery store, how easy is it going to turn into anything in your digestive system?
Okay, well, like that's number 10. So
let's go on
to number 6.
Oh,
processed foods go hand in hand with eating on the run and multitasking.
Well, sure enough, yeah.
Yeah, if you're eating on the run, you're not really sitting down.
Well, here's something interesting. The autonomic nervous system has two polarities, fight or flight,
yes,
or rest and digest and repair. And the fight or flight is the autonomic, is the sympathetic, and the digest and repair is the parasympathetic. So if you are trying to work, you know, active, you're not in the digest mode. So
no,
you're not going to digest. It's going to sit in your stomach for hours.
Not good.
You're supposed to eat and shut down. You're supposed to eat and siesta. You're supposed to eat and rest.
And the Spanish have it figured out. Number 7 on our list, nutrition labels on processed foods are often misleading and have harmful health effects. And of course, one of the things we're talking about here are labels that say sugar-free, but they contain other sweeteners like high fructose corn syrup or aspartame or stuff like that.
The best ones I like that say made with natural foods. It's not from, it's with. So half of them will be useless and then some of it will be okay.
Right. Number 8, diets high in processed meats like hot dogs, deli meats have been linked to various forms of cancer.
Yeah, that's the nitrates, salts, and who knows what else. Not a good news. Yeah, some people, depending on the type, need to eat quite a bit of protein and grass-fed beef and free-range chickens and good quality is possible. Definitely ask about genetically modified and antibiotic treated and the RGBH cattle and dairy not so good and feedlot finished beef not so good and waterlogged battery raised chicken not the best. All that.
Yeah, the quality of the food is important. Number 9 was eating too many processed foods can lead to infertility and malnutrition. And this is based on animal studies that have shown over 3 generations a deficient diet causes reproduction to cease.
Oh, yay. Well, we can go right back to Francis Pottinger, who in 1946 started a 12-year study of cats, where one group of cats he fed raw food and the other everything the same except cooked. And just go look up Francis Pottinger and cats. It's very frightful.
Infertility is on the rise because over 7 million people in America are infertile right now. So
yes.
We don't want that to increase.
There's genetic damage in every succeeding generation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Number 10. I feel like Letterman with his top 10. Processed foods are made for long shelf life, not for long human life. And I was going to say, I think you mentioned already, not for human digestion.
Right. Yeah. If it won't spoil, it won't digest either.
That's kind of a – you know, makes sense, and yet we don't make that connection.
Right. This is the argument for raw food. I am all for more raw and less cooked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. All right, so there we have our 10 things the processed food industry doesn't want you to know, and now you know them. And
the 5 foods that will make you fat or skinny, take your pick.
That's right. And the importance of knowing yourself in order to know, you know, exactly what you should be doing to maintain your health, which is a very important thing to be doing in this day and age, I think.
Oh, if you want to live a good, healthy, successful life, you better use the tools.
Absolutely. So, Martin, if somebody wanted to get into more into, you know, what they need to do specifically to improve their health and want to talk to you about that, what should they do?
We have a couple of places to go. The metabolic typing is on remarkablehealth.com/MT. That's Mama Tango or metabolic typing. The main website is Life Enthusiast, life-enthusiast.com. And you can call me, 1-866-543-3388. We're here from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific time, willing to take a call. So that's us, Life Enthusiast, restoring vitality to you and to the planet.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. See you next time. Bye-bye.